parenting advice on Talk About.
A warm welcome back to Margaret Gilbert, who has joined us in studio for our June parenting advice slot. Margaret, you're very welcome.
Good morning, Deirdre. Thank you. Or afternoon.
Afternoon, even. A very good topic this month. You're going to talk a bit about the importance of structure and routine for children during the summer holidays, especially children who might have neurodiversity issues like autism, ADHD and all of that. First of all, I suppose we should say there's still a few weeks of primary school to go, but it's no harm to talk about this now. And of course, the secondary schools are closed at this stage, apart from the exam classes.
Yeah. So I suppose school provides children with massive structure, massive routine, a focus in life, a purpose, a reason for getting up and going to school. And it even, it implicates in their after school activities as well, because some might be connected to school or whether it's homework or whatever. But when it shuts down completely then in June or July for the younger children, they're left with no focus, no structure actually to what's coming for the next 6 to 8 weeks or 12 weeks in say secondary schools. So we always think, but children know what we're doing. They know we're going on holidays in August. They know this, they know that. But what about the daily purpose? A little schedule is what I'd be recommending, that every child, no matter what age, should have, and they get used to structuring their time every week, or for younger children, every night before they go to bed. It just gives them a sense of purpose, a sense of knowing what's coming, a sense of being in charge. And it ties in then to managing social media. If we've unstructured time at home, our children go back into the bedrooms, they're less connected, and they're on the social media all the time. Whereas if you have that structure and routine, and we look at the 5 ways to wellness and good mental health, is make sure on that list there is exercise in for every day, where they're going to get their exercise, if they're playing GA, if they're playing tennis, whatever, that's their exercise, comes into their schedule automatically. But for some children that mightn't like exercise, we might pencil in where's their walk, where's their swim, where's their trip out to nature into it. Then we put in to give them a sense of purpose. Is there an elderly relative that could be helping every day or every second day? Can they go to Nana's? Can they go to someone down the road? Because giving is very good for our mental health and well-being. Of course, it's a focus then that the children actually have to get up, and they know that this is structured in to their routine across the week. But also we're in unprecedented times after the COVID, where there's huge levels of anxiety and school refusal going on. So if we want to keep our children ready for September, so all that anxiety hasn't built up again all during the summer, and that they haven't retreated back into their rooms, we need to provide structure for them. Structure that they know about. Grand, in our head we have a bit of a structure. Yeah, breakfast at 10 or 11, we'll have lunch, I'm working, I'll be home at 5, dad carry him to football. But the young person, what's their real purpose in life, that whole 12 weeks or 10 weeks? And children with neurodiversity have huge difficulty with planning ahead. Even an 18-year-old man, say, with autism, when his structure in the college stops for the summer, they get a huge sense of depression, helplessness. They fall completely down because now they have no structure.
No sense of purpose.
No sense of purpose, yeah. And no idea, because planning forward, difficulty seeing how even to map out their week is for them. So you'd have a young person that might come to you and say, I feel depressed, I'm down out, whatever you are. And then you realise they've just finished college, so we know what has happened. So you do out a little timetable with them. Once they have 3 things marked in across the week, they go out the door as if you were after giving them $1 million. Oh, I know now what I must do. I know I'm a must. So we need to teach all young people to learn to structure themselves. And that helps us to monitor their time-wasting activities, like on the social media, on the phone, being locked inside in the bedroom and things. So I think it has huge impact on children, that loss of structure and routine, and we don't realise it and we don't do a lot about it.
And of course, what happens sometimes, parents have the best of intentions, but like what children don't realise is that the parents aren't on school holidays necessarily. The parents still have to make a living and get up and go to work and all of that. So the worst thing you can do, I would imagine, Margaret, is let them lie in bed late every morning and then they're up late.
Yeah.
And they're sort of aimless.
Yeah.
There's no plan. Everything kind of goes with the flow.
Absolutely. And that feeds into helplessness, a lack of purpose, lack of confidence and self-esteem. If we know we have something to do the following day, we're even planning around it. We're thinking around it. So we get up. So if teenagers especially love to sleep all in the morning and they get up late at night then and they're on the internet till 3 or 4, if they continue that pattern over the summer, it's not healthy long term for them anyway. And they need to learn healthy media use. So it's about trying to help them to recognise, to structure themselves. So when it comes back to September, getting up at 9 o'clock the first month in September isn't mayhem, trying to get them up, wake them up, get them alert and they're going off to school. It's about trying to keep as close to that structure as possible, that we get up in the morning. Yeah, it's a lot more relaxed, but that they have a focus in the morning. I suppose the other thing that I believe young people need of all age, housework. When we structure out that, we put in, well, your jobs are, say, empty the dishwasher, your jobs feed the dogs, you walk them. What time of day do you want to do that? Where are you going to fit that in? If they're on dog feeding duties, what time in the morning are you going to be up and what time? So they're structuring that into their day. So it's the most productive thing we can do is actually to sit down and manage our time and know exactly where we're going to spend it. So hours and hours on the internet and games isn't eating into our time.
Let's zone in for a moment on the housework side of it, because, and maybe even focus on teenagers or the older children. You mention housework or chores or jobs and you'll get the eye roll and the sigh and, but I'm on my summer holidays. I was working hard at school all year. You know, I'm on my holidays. So how do you deal with that response?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we must always listen to them. So I'd be reflecting it right back to them. Yes, you had a real, real tough year. Fair play to you. You did really, really well. But you still need to be able to eat. You still need to be able to sleep. You still need to have a nice, clean house. And as part of this family, there is an expectation that you help out with the workload. You're free. You have the time. Yes, you had a tough year. Fair play to you. You got through it and you did really well. Now, for the next couple of months, you need to help me lighten the load. Possibly most parents are working, so I'm still working. I still have these hours to do. So there's an expectation that everyone rolls in. I know one rule I used to always have in my house in the evening was whoever's home puts on the dinner. At 5 o'clock, I might leave it ready or there'd be a list of what's to be done or something, but whoever was home, put on the dinner.
Yeah, peel the spuds and get cracking.
Peel the spuds, yeah, and have a dinner on. Because isn't it a very simple thing? First of all, they need to learn to cook. I suppose we hear an awful lot of parents saying children have a huge sense of entitlement. But if we do everything for them, all day, every day, and there's no expectation that they contribute to the household chores and tasks, then that's where it comes from. So we need to hold the expectations from, even from the youngest one. A little 2-year-old can be helped to put the placemats up on a shelf. They can be helped teach them how to use the brush and pen on the floor. Very small little tasks. They need to start very young. I suppose there was one house I was in years ago and I admired it so much. You know, we went there and we had a meal there. But when we finished, every member of the family got up. They wouldn't let guests do it, got up. They all cleared everything. They emptied off the table, they cleared it, they cleared the dishwasher, cleaned down the spaces, they did everything together as a family, and then we all moved to the next room. It's lovely to see it. Why should children get the impression that it's only mums or dads should be in the kitchen cleaning up after them, doing all these things? So we need to look at our values. If we want respect as one of our values, we have to role model it, and that is expecting that our children will. And of course, the young person might be disappointed that she has to work over the summer, and we'll acknowledge that. But we'll also acknowledge that she's a valuable part of the family that also needs to contribute.
I think what happens, this is just my own theory, Margaret, from talking to other parents, I think what happens is, the scenario is you say, look, would you empty the dishwasher or will you make your bed or will you tidy the sitting room or whatever? And the response might be a sigh or a bang of a door or, a sulk, basically. And I think that happens the first couple of times. And I think then some parents kind of go, you know what, it's not worth it, because if I ask him to do X, Y, Z, he'll throw a strop. And then the parent gives up and stops asking. And I think that's actually what happens. The parent wants to avoid the scene and the tantrum.
Exactly. So that suits the young person, so they repeat the pattern. But also, if I'm asked to do extra jobs at work and I don't like it, I'll mutter and I'll grunt, and I'm maybe not in front of the boss now, but you know, you'll mutter. It's okay if they're angry, mad, upset or browned off over it. They're entitled to their emotions and their feelings. But what they're entitled to is to be able to deal with their own. We don't have to manage ours. So if they are thrown up the eyes of their disappointment, we need to walk away. That's okay. He doesn't like it, doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, so don't come in with a lecture like, you treat this house like a hotel.
Absolutely, because we're moving away. The problem is we ask the child to do something, so that's the problem, right? Then the child throws up their eyes and everything. Then you get, don't you do that to me. So now we have another argument going on.
It's all escalates.
Then he'll go out and he'll bang the door. But if he wants to be browned off, he's entitled to be. He doesn't have to love it. He's not going to love everything. That's all part of experiencing emotions and going up and down. And parents keeping back from them and not getting their emotions and the young person's emotions mixed up.
What's your thoughts on tying the whole... I know this is controversial and people really disagree. They have very varied opinions about it. Tying the housework into the pocket money. Now, I know some experts say no. They do housework because they're part of the family and everyone in the family does it, and the home and the pocket money is entirely separate. And then other parents think it's a good way to, you know, to sort of teach them that, you know, you don't get money unless you work for it. So what side of the argument would you fall into?
You see, I suppose at the end of the day, if it works for a parent, that works for them. But if you're implementing any of those strategies, it won't work for all the children. It won't work for them. So it's about knowing your child, whether this works, that if I give him a few bob for doing the work, does he come up, turn up, does he do it? Am I still coaxing him? If you're giving a young person pocket money to do something and you're still there Saturday morning, will you get up and will you clean this, will you? That's not working. That's not working. So we must look at something else. I suppose research would say that the children are entitled to a small little bit of the income of the family, which is the pocket money. So whether people want to tie that into jobs or not, and whether it works or not, is different for every family.
Depends on the family.
It depends on the family. But I think children, if they are getting money for pocket money, it's only working if they're getting up and doing the stuff without being nagged. But also, there has to be an expectation that they row in as a team with other jobs without being paid for it.
Okay, that's a good solution, actually. Margaret, we'll take a break. I would like to throw this out to the listeners now, those who have children, and maybe even if you're, we'll say, an older person who reared children and they're all adults themselves. What's your thought, or what was your attitude towards getting them to do housework? And what's your thoughts and attitudes towards what Margaret mentioned earlier, structuring their summer holidays? How do you handle it? What's your advice and what would you pass on? And also, of course, if you have a question for Margaret, 083 300 3300. Just coming up to 16 minutes past 2 on Monday's Talk About. You're listening to Radio Kerry and we're back in a moment.
Talk About.
Parenting advice on Talk About.
Now, we're talking to parenting coach Margaret Gilbert about putting a structure on your child or teenager's summer break, because after all, as I said at the outset, the secondaries are off, the primaries will be off in a couple of weeks' time. Margaret, just to return to children with neurodevelopment issues, neurodiversity issues, do they like, we'll say, having a list of jobs as opposed to kids who don't have those challenges?
Yeah, I suppose when you start these things very young with children, you know, when children get a diagnosis first, the children's services and all that put in picture schedules and visuals and things for them. But as they get older, maybe 6, 7 and 8, parents begin to not use them because it looks as if the young person is functioning well, is doing, but he knows the routine, he knows the way people are dressing, reading and all that kind of thing, what's going on. But for the summer, then they have all that loss of structure. So it's so important for them to have that purpose, a sense of control of their environment, what's coming next. And to they increase flexibility and reduce rigidity around change. Because if you have a visual schedule, now a visual schedule for a child with autism or ADHD or what have you can, with pictures for younger children, words when they get older, that can transition onto calendars on the iPhone and things, or the screen time later on as they get older. I always say use the paperwork for the first 7 or 8 years till they get into the routine and the structure of it, because otherwise it becomes a battle with the iPads. But if there is to be a change in their schedule or anything like that, you can put a picture of change over the activity that was to be happening, and you put a picture of the new event that's been happening, that is going to happen, so that the young person with autism and ADHD can actually process the information. Change is coming. They may not like it, but when we talk to them in words, they can't process it. Too many words. And there's a lot of high emotions because they don't like change. They have inflexible thinking. But these schedules increase flexible thinking and the openness to change. So they're hugely important. Even, say, children with autism now or ADHD, they may not think up, like, even to structure them to say, this is your half hour for trampoline play. And this is your hour for free play down in the bedroom. I'm not talking about them structuring as swimming lessons in the morning, gymnastics in the afternoon, GA, having something. But even at home, their work task, it builds their confidence, their self-esteem to be part of the family and doing a few jobs and things. We might have to teach them the skills first, where to put things in the dishwasher and things, because they mightn't follow the natural pattern of organisation. But when they see that in their calendar, it gives them a sense of control. And if they don't have that, they start controlling the people and the environment then around them. You can't do this and you can't go there. No, 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 she can't come in, because they haven't processed the information that someone new is visiting, or that someone's coming into the house, or they don't want mom and dad to go out because they don't know if they'll be back. And they get into other systems of control that aren't supportive for their development long term.
We've some feedback and a question for you, Margaret. First of all, this is lovely to hear. It's a texter who says, I remember when it was our turn for the station, you know, having the stations in the house. And this listener says, our three teenage children each had their jobs to do on the day to help me. It all went well and no bother at all to them. Teamwork, says that listener. So, yeah, so good for you. Now, here's a good question for you. Listener says, would you mind asking Margaret this for me? I have a three-year-old who refuses to go to bed for anyone, only his dad. If we go on a night out, he will still be up when we get home, no matter what time it is. He would be hysterical if my sister, who babysits, even mentions his pyjamas. We've a night away coming up and I don't know how he's going to cope. If he wakes at night and I go in to check on him, he will scream for his dad and tell me to go away.
Yeah, so it sounds very like maybe a little bit of anxiety or a control here. The young fella, give him another couple of years, that's around controlling the house, the things that we don't want. It's only dad can put me to bed and things. So it might be taking it at a very slow pace, that practicing, that dad will be missing one or two nights and mom will persist with the bedtime routine until the young person knows that they are going to alternate it every night, so that the young child gets used to somebody else doing it. But when you start that work, you might have a good few bad nights where it might take him to 11, 12, but I'd persist in a very calm way. Dad's not available tonight. I'm putting you to bed and working through it, so the young child knows that deciding who will, who won't put them to bed, not going to bed for a babysitter and things, they're all things we have to watch out, because anxiety could be underlining them, and if we give in to them, the problem gets worse and worse as they get older.
So you kind of have to power through with this one.
You have to power through this one, but very gently. It would be very much about maybe dad not being there of a night and mom having a plan, start the nighttime routine at 8 or 10 o'clock or what have you, and insisting thing, and eventually, even if it takes 3, 4, 5 hours until that young fella's inside in bed and he knows that mom is going to persist and continue calmly with this, despite no matter how many times he shouts or roars, and it might take 1 or 2 nights like that during a week to break the pattern of only dad putting him to bed. But one would have to be very regulated, very calm, willing to stay the 4 or 5 hours, because what the children do is escalate the screaming, the roaring. We get fed up of it, we get tired of it, we're worried about the other children in the house, and we're worried about the neighbours. So we need to put all them aside and just, how am I going to manage to sit out this out for 5 or 6 hours until he actually knows that we mean what we say.
But it'll be worth it when it works then.
Yeah.
And the child gets the message. Fair
enough.
Absolutely. That's good advice. And Margaret, again, to come back to something you mentioned early on in our chat, you spoke about social media and phone use and laptops and all of that, the devices that, that children have during the summer, and indeed teenagers in particular. What's your advice about monitoring and keeping a close eye on, or controlling, for want of a better word, how much screen time they have?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important, and I think it's important for everyone in the house, for parents, adolescents, teenagers, younger children. Scrolling is addictive. Now, they're technology of our times. We do need them, and we do need to know how to use them, and the young people are on them. So a certain amount of it is beneficial, necessary, and it does help brain development. But when we go over to the other end of it, I mean, 5 and 6 hours a day on the internet is not good for the health of a young person. That's my honest belief, and research would suggest that. Do you know? So younger children then, we have children as young as 9 months on screen time. Like, when we're talking about children going back into their bedrooms, not talking to us, not coming to the table, there's little or no connection, there's school refusal, all those kind of things. School, connection with us, outside activities, they're all competing with social media. All screen time. So, like I said, it's addictive. 19 seconds is the average scroll rate and the average attention span on the social media. So is that what we want our children to be leaning into? And if we had difficulties sending them to school last September, we're letting them build all them negative patterns again now during the summer. So it's harder to break that cycle. So they need support, as we all do. Need support to teach them healthy screen time. And it's again going back to structuring their routine. You have X amount of hours per day on your screen time, whatever parents, where do you want to use it? Do you want an hour in the morning or 2 hours in the evening, or where is it? Is there extra Saturday and Sundays? And I suppose it's essential that, in my opinion, that it goes off at 11 or 12 at night. And I suppose what happens is, a lot of parents take out packages for children on their phone because it's cheaper and they have unlimited mobile data and all that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, would they not be better off with a package for 20 euros a week in which they have to hand over the money for, that even if we give it to them, so that demonstrates that this has to be bought and paid for. But if they have limited time in it, they learn to budget their time. And it's not as accessible all night. But they have unlimited access. And I mean, we adults are finding it hard enough to come off the phone. And what we're losing from us adults and from our children, all that, is the art of conversation.
Mm.
There's no communication. Why would our young ones come out of the bedroom to talk to someone at the cooker that may be looking at a screen time? Or, you know what I mean, that when we sit down at a family dinner, all the mobiles are up on top of the table. So it gives the message to the young person that anybody outside here is more important than anyone in here.
Mm. You know? And they, I think as well, somebody said this to me recently, children have lost the ability to do nothing and to be bored.
Absolutely.
Because if you see a child in a queue, or they're waiting for something, it's a device. It's kind of, it's almost like it's a mortal sin to be just sitting there looking around you.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And when we allow children to be like that, we stifle creativity. Do you know the art of making something even out of a cardboard box? Like it was always said, the children played more with the boxes off the Christmas presents than they do with the toys. Do you know, we stifle all that kind of thing.
Mm.
Do you know, and I know parents can't entertain their children all the time, and they shouldn't have to, but putting in, this is your flexi time, this is your downtime, this is your free time, this is where you recover from, take a switch off hour. Do you know, from society, we're not teaching children that. We feel there's structure from morning to routine. Now, I'm calling for structure, but not structures in football, soccer. It's about, where do I do my bit of housework? Where do I fit in my bit of walk time? Where do I fit in something to learn? Where do I fit in helping Nan or Grandad? Do you know?
Exactly. Listener says, should young teens have the same jobs to do rather than different chores unless they agree to swap? Should they have the same jobs to do rather than different chores? Okay, so I think what that person means is there might be a child who absolutely hates emptying the dishwasher or emptying the bins or whatever. So should you allow them to do something else and swap with their brother who doesn't mind doing it? I think that's what that person is asking.
Yeah, I suppose that goes back to parental choice again. It is good that they try everything, because in a house, if they have it in time to come, they're going to have to do a bit of everything. But if the parent is happy enough to let them swap, I suppose one thing we have to be mindful is that the brother that's always giving in or giving him over might prefer the job he's doing, and he might be wronged by having to swap with the other fella that doesn't like the job every time. But again, it's parental choice. If the young person is willing to do jobs, sit down with him, discuss which are his favourite, maybe even lessen the number of times he has to do that job or something, but do up an agreement with him. We'd like you to do all these jobs, try them out, when would you like to do them, what ones will you do, and maybe there'll be one day that you'll do one that you don't like.
Yeah, exactly. Johnny's been on to recommend a book. I'm sure maybe you've heard of it. I haven't now, but maybe you have, Margaret. It's called Hold On To Your Kids, Why Parents Need To Matter More Than Peers. And it's by Gordon Neufeldt and Gabor Maté. It looks like it's Why Parents Need To Matter More Than Peers. That looks like an interesting book. You haven't heard of it, no?
No, I haven't. But Gabor, I have heard some of his work, and he's brilliant. He does an awful lot around addiction, trauma and all that kind of thing. He's really, really good. But I do agree with that children as teenagers, their friends do become hugely important, probably more important than parents. But children come to us to be listened to and heard in short bursts as teenagers. And it's when we're silent during those times that we listen and we reflect back to them and have everyday conversations instead of trying to fix them, sort them and all. That's what keeps the connection with parents going during that time. It's not about spending hours with them doing all the activities, but when they're talking, listen. Let them talk. It's their voice we should be hearing. And the more, if you have a young person comes down out of the room and they're talking to mother, and next thing they get given out for leaving their shoes here, given out for that, why would they keep coming down?
Yeah.
Do you know, because it just goes from one thing to, you haven't done your study, are you studying, have you enough learned that? All that is going on. So they stay above in their bedroom. But if they came down and, you know, even if they said, Jesus, football was horrible last night or so and so, all we have to do is sit. So last night was tough at the sports field for you, do you know. Well done,
reflect
new manager.
It
reflect it back to them. So you keep the conversation. So we're hearing the young person's voice. We can hear what's going on in their head. And we need to just listen to understand from their perspective, not ours. We tend to try and make sense of it for them, but they'll make their own sense if we reflect it back, which is better.
Margaret, I know we're over time, but we have one other question for you. A listener says, will you ask Margaret if she knows anything about processing disorder that a girl of 14 may have? Processing disorder.
Yes, sometimes it's related to language processing disorder, in which they process the language at a much, much slower speed than other children. And if you have a young person with language processing disorder or what have you, we just need to speak a little slower to them. Speak slow. And they usually have a response time. You could say to a young person now, say a five-year-old child running across the room, and you say to him, stop, please, we're doing desk work. He could keep running for another 18 seconds and then he could stop. to come back to do the work because it has taken him that long to process the information. So what we do then is just give him his time. When we're issuing commands to people with a slow processing style, say less, use less words, stress the important part of the sentence, go slow and show if we can. That aids processing much, much more. They get the first two or three words of a lot of sentences and the rest is lost in them. So talking continuously to people that have slow processing style can be very overwhelming, very fast.
Mm. I'd say that person could probably do with maybe getting in touch with you.
Yeah.
Which of course leads me to asking you to remind people how to get in touch with you, Margaret.
Yeah, my phone number is 087-174-7813.
Okay, and you're
MargaretGilbertLifeCoach.com.
MargaretGilbertLifeCoach.com. And we'll end on a lovely positive note. A listener says, Margaret is just fabulous. Such a balanced view and advice as always. She is such an advocate for younger people and it's refreshing to hear her opinion. I'm sure a lot of happy homes are out there because of her. So isn't that lovely?
Lovely.
Lovely positive compliment there to end this month's parenting slot. Margaret, as always, a pleasure. Lovely. We'll chat to you again in July, all going well, and enjoy the sunshine.
Thanks very much, Deirdre. Take care.
We'll take a break, folks. Back in a moment.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Kitty O'Shea's Seafood and Grill Restaurant.